Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
And I'm Arthur.
And it is the first week of June. Happy Pride, everybody.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes. It's Pride Month. We are getting what seems to, from early reviews, is going to be a fantastic queer horror film, Leviticus, which I'm really looking forward to in the middle of this month. It has a release, I think, June 19th, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right.
Can't wait to cover that later. But since we had a kind of rock and roll month of May, but it was so much fun.
Great month.
Oh, so good. We had fantastic releases across the entire month, which was so cool. We now, not that the release schedule for anything in general has slowed down, but the major releases have kind of chilled out a little bit.
Right.
So in the anticipation of some hopefully very big releases within like Q3 of this year with In a Violent Nature 2 on its way, we were so fortunate to have the opportunity to sit down with Rye Barrett, who plays Johnny infamously in the series and is returning for the second film.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. We're super excited about it. We're talking about everything from the first movie and the filming of it and some cool information about the second movie that is coming up. Super very, very interesting interview. Thank you so much for sitting down with us. And yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys can stick around for this one and enjoy our sit down with Rye. Well, Rye, thank you so much for hopping on with us. Obviously, most recently, I think the notoriety that you've gained for playing the character of Johnny in A Violent Nature has probably kind of skyrocketed slashers, particularly Canadian slashers, I think,
oh, yeah.
back into the mainstream, where maybe we were like out of it for a little bit, but we've kind of like we've brought it back a little
bit,
which is which is why this was such a cool film too. Like, we covered it with Horror Roulette Podcast not too long ago,
yeah,
which is how we had like everybody kind of got in touch with each other, which is super fun. But this has been so cool to like re-examine, and now obviously to see the hype that this film has gained for doing something admittedly quite different in the slasher genre. That is just not something that we see very often, which is to really have the killer's POV for basically the entirety of the film or the majority of it, which is just not something that we see very often. I think to kick things off, I guess I ask everybody this, my curiosity for you and sort of your career and kind of the trajectory of everything is kind of, I guess, why horror, maybe what's like attracted you to the genre and what keeps you here? Because as far as I can tell, you've been involved in the indie horror scene, particularly in Ontario and in Canada as a whole, for quite a long time now.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a natural thing too. Like I'm a huge horror fan in general. But I just love films in general. So I love everything. But it just so happened that like the first thing that I did, I did with friends, and it was a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of kicked it off. And then we kind of got in that area. And the other thing is that there's also a built-in audience and a fan base.
There is.
It doesn't really have the same, same thing with other genres. Obviously there are sci-fi, and like, you know, it branches over into all these different things, but horror has this, it always has had this kind of support system that's just there. So mm-hmm. I found that it's easier to make horror films because more people are always looking for them. And then you have your horror conventions and fellow film geeks who just meet up and talk, and next thing you know, another movie's getting made. So I find you touch base with more people, and then I would meet other filmmakers, and so it just kind of perpetuated that way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say it's like an easier community to connect with in terms of filmmaking than others, from your experience?
I would say so. I mean, like, because like other stuff branches into other things, and like you end up doing comedies, and you'll do anything. I mean, as an actor, I audition for anything and read for anything, really. But there's a horror community. Like it's there.
Yes.
So like you meet more people that way, and you make connections, and you have, you know, you love the same kind of stuff. And
yeah, I think we can confirm there's like a diehard fan base
Oh yeah. Across
every niche and subgenre, I think, of horror, you just find people who are like diehard fans of those specific types of yeah. films and works and stuff.
Seriously, like everyone from the podcasters, reviewers, yeah. directors, actors, we've spoken to so many people, and everyone kind of welcomes you with open arms, and yeah. it's just such a mm-hmm. warm feeling, you know?
Everybody's very, very cool. Nobody yeah. is standoffish yeah. or cold in any capacity. It's just like I think it's the community that gives the opposite level of warmth than what you would expect based on the content yeah. that they're creating or consuming or whatever the case might be.
For the people who aren't a part of it, they would yeah. think otherwise, but it's not. That's not it at all.
That's like the opposite.
Yeah.
So, shifting into, I guess for you, that's it in terms of career, and particularly obviously within a violent nature, of course, and the type of character and sort of the level of, I think the level of icon that Johnny has sort of become as a character just in a very short period of time, particularly, you know, when we reference slasher villains, very often we go back to classics. We go back to the, you know, the sort of like large ones that everybody knows, like a Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, whatever the case might be. But we don't, in more modern films, we do see some that become kind of more iconic, but I feel like they don't necessarily always have the staying power, they don't necessarily come to mind immediately when people think of slasher villains. But people that we've spoken to, and just based on like our own kind of interactions over the last couple of years, I think have really shown that Johnny is the type of killer that people are going to be talking about for years to come, probably decades to come. And he also falls into that category of killers who, you know, as we see, that's it, aren't like, can't use any kind of vocal performance to enhance the character in any capacity. You know, Freddy's really lucky. He gets to be smarmy and sarcastic and shitty, but in a way that people really, really enjoy. And like Robert Englund is incredible at playing that character. But it's something that's so memorable. But there are so many others, obviously, like the silent types of slashers who have to do a lot of work with the physicality of the role to create a character that actually stands out, that is memorable in some way. And I think that you've really achieved that with Johnny's character, partially because of the filming and everything, of course, but also because of the physicality of the character, since this is, you know, something that's very much non-speaking particularly. And I know that from what I've seen as well, you've had some roles in the past as well that have kind of leaned into that a little bit as yeah. well, haven't had like a ton of spoken parts in them necessarily. So my question is, between both of those styles of character, whether you have more dialogue to work with or almost none at all, or none in the case of someone like Johnny, what is it that informs your prep differently for a character like that?
I think, honestly, it's always different depending on the character and what it is exactly, but they are very different approaches. When you're doing something less nonverbal or zero verbal,
yeah,
versus that, but it is really you have to focus on a completely separate set of details that you're going to be working on, and it is all just physical. So it's like, how are you going to get something across? And also, you don't want to do too much of one thing. You don't want to steal from somebody else, but like, you know what, you want to pay homage to something, but not just take it and redo the exact same thing. So it really is like, you know, looking at all those elements. And for Johnny, I think it is really a lot of Chris Nash's his attention to detail of like the design, what the character looks like, the mask, and then exactly how you are following, and you're basically hanging out with him the whole time. So it's a different aspect that way. So part of what I focused on with that was thinking about how the camera was going to be following me, like what that angle was going to be and what you would be seeing, and you know, really try to put my shoulders and, you know, bulk up my neck and shoulder muscles and all that kind of stuff to make him look like a hulking kind of figure that would add to it. So there was it was all about like a specific stance. I had a checklist that I would just, you know, mentally check off every time we were about to start rolling. I'd be like, all right, make sure I do this, this, and this, and it would keep it consistent. And then the timing, and that was a lot to do with cinematography and just like what the scene was going to be too. So it was all a lot to do with just like the technicalities and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I think Anthony and Horror Roulette mentioned, that you had to move your shoulders first to see where you're going, depending on the mask that you had and everything. Like, those are very important and interesting things to consider.
Catch the face, obviously, if you're turning and you're like, oh, my face shows in this mask. Oops.
Yeah, because there's some, so we had like multiple masks where some, it was fully open in the front, it would come and the side of the goggles would be there, but the second that ended, like, you would be able to see my face. And then there were some that had they were missing the goggles on the front. So yeah, I would literally try to, it was also another technical thing too, because with Pierce, our cinematographer, he'd be following. So it would be a way that I could kind of cue him as to when I was going to move so that he could frame properly too. So I try to, do the shoulders first and head follow so that it would always be kind of in that, we'd be safe basically. That's so you wouldn't see my face.
And I imagine there's just no, it doesn't feel like it anyway with the pacing of the film. There's no rushing of anything. You know, we're following at a very leisurely pace as, you know, Johnny is making his way, as you're kind of making your way through the forest and going about, you know, your murdery business and things, obviously, but also just enjoying the scenery and the sound design and all of the nature sounds and everything that you get when you're in that kind of atmosphere, because obviously you guys were up north. So
yeah it was a lot of just pacing it all out and timing and I mean that all kind of leads into the like, is if you'll notice through the film, like, the pace slightly picks up throughout, and the end is like, not that it does it much, but it does, he's moving a little faster by the end of the film, because there is a motivation and everything. But yeah, I mean, it was beautiful shooting where we were up north and just outside of Sault Ste. Marie, and the landscape and where we were shooting and what we were shooting really kind of dictated what, you know, the speed would be and where exactly we'd be moving to and all that stuff to just kind of fit into what the special effects sequences were going to be.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know, okay, and I hope, I don't know if we like misread this somewhere, but there, apparently what I had come across and we had read was that with some of the prep that you were doing for the role, you had watched videos of bear attacks. Is that true?
yeah, I did. Because partially there's, you know, the story and the script and they mention, Johnny is described as kind of being, you know, like an animal and a territorial kind of creature. So like, he's sort of a golem of that area. But I looked at him, I was like, you know what, I'm going to literally just look at him as like an animal sometimes because of how he moves. He does, you know, his motivation is very smooth and like an animal walking through the woods until it becomes attack time.
Yes.
And then you become a completely, like, those animals become a completely different creature when it's time to like do the thing, right? So I kind of watched that and tried to mimic a little bit like how a bear is just walking through the woods, and then when it does attack, it becomes much more of a, you know, a vicious, just another animal, another creature sort of thing. And I know it went with the story literally, but I thought it would just be something to, you know, kind of try to mimic. And then with the sequel, I actually watched shark attack videos.
Nice.
I can't really explain too much without giving anything away about it, but when you see it, or when I get to talk more about it, you'll understand why I did that for that one. So
okay.
That's... Now, when the second one comes out, you can come back on the podcast and you can explain the scenes in which you actually.
So he's a bear in the first one. He's a shark in the second one.
Yeah, that's it.
Arguably, also fairly calm until they attack something.
Yes,
too, to be fair,
that's true. Yeah.
And there does, it fits with the entire sort of analogy, particularly with like the last scene of the first film that has all to do with the bear attack specifically, but is it a bear? Is it something else? Yeah. Is it Johnny? Like, that's the whole.
And also it weirdly relates. And again, that was kind of like, found this during research, but apparently the original title of the movie was Sleeping Animal. And I was like, when I read the bear attack video, I was like, okay, this all kind of makes sense together.
Yeah. But you know, I didn't know that. And so I think I was listening to the Horror Roulette thing that you did the podcast that you guys were on. Yeah. There's some things that I don't know. And so I find out afterwards and I was like, oh, I didn't even know that myself. And then I'm like, I'll ask them and they'll be like, oh yeah, it was going to be that. And then, so like, yeah, it's funny.
There's so many pieces of that puzzle that just fit together.
Yeah, that's it. You know? Yeah. How like intense was it for you to do that prep? You know what I mean? In terms of like, did it affect you in any way? Because I've read a bunch of stuff when people were doing you know, for example, for like the Joker prep or whatever it is, like they almost changed their behavior because a lot of it is, what's it called, that actor type?
method acting.
Method acting, yeah. That's it. So I know, like, for you, it's probably not method acting, but I mean, it probably had some kind of effect on you watching all that stuff. And
this one, honestly, like, sometimes it can, because it just like certain roles, if you're really putting yourself in an emotional spot, it, like,
yes,
it really does just put your brain, like, you psychologically start to, like, just act a certain way. But when you're going through these motions, right? But I mean, like, you always know when it's real or when you're rolling and when you're not. And like, I don't really buy into a lot of the method bullshit. Leto does and all that stuff. But I do agree that there is a level of, like, it can get in your head. Mm-hmm. But for In About Nature, it's much more a technical. It's much more mm-hmm. like about everything that's happening, like the camera work and the special effects and the other actors and everybody involved. It's much more of a technical thing. So for me, the biggest thing is, like, just being, like, physically in shape, and you can get pretty exhausted and you can hurt yourself by doing those things, right? So, like, it's more of a physical thing, if anything, like, you walk away from and you got some bruises and you can feel the day that you just put in, kind of thing. But other than that, it's not really as much a psychological thing as other things can be.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I mean, you're carrying all that gear, right? Yeah. It's also, like, warm and stuff. Like, there's so many technical things that come with it.
Felt like you were shooting, like, spring or summer. I could be wrong, but it felt like
we were. First one was mostly it was like spring, late summer. But honestly, our cinematographer, Pierce Derricks, he's a trooper, because it's probably the hardest on him, honestly, because he's,
I'm sure,
every single moment of every single scene, he's there carrying everything. So,
I mean, if there's black flies around, it's hot enough for them to exist, and they're the worst thing in the world.
Oh, God, they're awful.
They're terrible.
People don't realize they'll just take, like, an entire chunk out of your flesh and happily fly away.
They were the worst part that I had was because I had the mask, and they blacked out my eyes, and black flies are attracted to, like, dark things for whatever reason. So they would go after my eyes, and they would swarm around my eyes, and I started wearing a net underneath the mask so that it would keep them out, but they still found a way in there. So I'd be walking and, like, closing my eyes sometimes just because there'd be flies, like, and you can't, you're in character, so you can't do anything, right? So
that just sounds like a horror movie by itself, doing that.
Just making the film. Yeah. But there's just something, I think people don't necessarily know, like, unless you've spent time, like, in cottage country in certain different areas, that this just, oh God, it's awful.
They can be so rough. Terrible. Yeah. That was the worst part for me. Like, that was my roughest thing, I think.
I bet.
Did you have to do any kind of, like, other physical gains, I guess, or losses for this role? Because I remember reading that you lost, like, a bunch of weight for one of the roles and you had to put it back on and stuff like that.
I didn't for this more. I didn't really put much on for John at the time, because I was pretty bulked up, I think, from other stuff that I was working on. Mm-hmm. So for the first one, I pretty much just maintained what I was. And then for the sequel, I trained pretty hard and I tried to bulk up a little bit more for the sequel. Mm-hmm. But other than that, no, I didn't have to drop any weight or anything too crazy.
I mean, makes sense. It's like we were just talking, it's demanding, right? So
yeah,
it's not even just that.
You want to be in shape for it. That's the thing. It makes everything easier, right? If you're in, I mean, it works for the character, obviously, but it just makes everything easier to be able to do, because the effect sequences can be pretty, they can be taxing, because you're doing the same thing over and over again, or you have to hold a certain pose that's really awkward or something like that. So it all just helps.
Yeah, but then you're in great shape, so that's pretty good.
it's not a bad problem.
Yeah, that's it.
I guess the interesting thing too about Johnny's character is that, you know, we're talking about, like, the animalistic aspects of the character and everything, but he also has this element of sort of a childlike aspect to his character, where, you know, he exists in this sort of space where it's almost like he never grew up to a degree, and he still finds, like, little moments to be kind of childlike. He reminds me of Leatherface. I think that's what it is that I'm just kind of like, oh, poor Johnny, he didn't ask to do that for any of this to happen to him, and I feel bad. Maybe that's why I like the character so much too. Is that something that was different for you too, to go from, you know, obviously attacking people and, you know, hooking someone's head and, like, pulling their entire, like, top half of their body through their stomach and things like that? Like, was that different to go from shooting something like that to shooting something like that little scene with the car?
Yeah, I mean that, like, because that was the that's like the one scene where Johnny kind of gets to, you know, show some humanity, and
that's
yeah.
it,
and see his face, his face underneath.
Well, yeah, underneath all the makeup and stuff.
And that was one. That was the other thing is that when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, this is my one spot that I can try to, you know, give him a little humanity, a little bit of empathy, even though he's doing these horrible things. But it was really, and with all that makeup on, you really have to like exaggerate your like eyebrow movements and just anything mm-hmm. basically to try and get it through. But that was one of the things too, is that Nash, I don't think Nash originally wanted Johnny to have that much of an empathetic kind of connection there. And it just kind of came through, but I think he liked what it was. And it could, for the way that I looked at it, I always looked at it as like a Frankenstein's monster kind of moment where you do get that, just that moment of connection, or yeah. Leatherface too. Like you do get that, you know, like those moments where you see him in the original one where he's like, well, you can tell he's worried about it, and you can just see yeah. it through him. And so like, I just wanted to put as much as I could into that one little moment. So it is very different from doing the technical stuff. That's one moment where you actually get to really kind of, you know, like focus on the fine tuning of little details that you're going to put in there. It was a fun scene to do. And Steve Kostanski's makeup he did a great job too. So it was really fun to work with that and to see what it was going to look like actually.
Oh, it's a part of it. There are so many cool little homages, even in the makeup. I found too, obviously Friday the 13th, but even just like the makeup itself reminded me of, you know, Jason at the end of the first film when he pops out of the water, when you actually see him yeah. like in the makeup for the first time and things like that. That's kind of what it reminded me of. So you get all these fun little homages and fun little moments. Mm-hmm. It's just done in such a different way because we've never been given the opportunity to be like, now, what if I just followed Jason the entire time? Mm-hmm. And then I got to feel bad for him sometimes about things. And you don't really, it's rare in Friday the 13th that you get to feel bad for him, except when he's like a child at yeah. some point. But outside of that, you don't really get to. So it's cool. I really like that they kept that in there or yeah. added that for Johnny's character, because it gives us a moment to realize we get it with the backstory that is given sort of very much off screen and like sort of expository dialogue and everything mm-hmm. where all the kids who are like at the campground or whatever are having the conversation about what happened to him. But it's so nice to like have that tied into mm-hmm. you getting to have a moment where we also still see it, and it reinforces that idea of this
yeah.
child that's been made almost animalistic from all of this.
It is, and I really like that moment for all of that too. And I think it's also just like it's one of those moments where you get to the narration and the backstory is kind of unreliable, like because you don't know exactly like the myths and everything they're talking about. You don't know exactly what is the truth, but you get that one little moment where you see that. So that kind of gives you a little bit of like solidification for what the story is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about this yesterday about kind of like the homages that it had and the kind of the characters it reminded us. And we were like, I think your portrayal of Johnny and the way that you played it is the Canadian answer to Kane Hodder.
Yeah. There you go.
I am going to stand by this because it was so well done.
I'm telling you.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. I appreciate that. I'm a massive Kane Hodder fan. So
yeah, he's iconic. So I think this is just our answer to it.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Have you ever met him?
I have actually. It's funny. I've met him a couple of times. So I met him in past years at conventions, just as a fan. I actually met him on a Friday the 13th. In 2013, actually. So that was wow. that was the first time I met him. I met him at another one. And then actually just in the past year, I was at a convention in Nashville. And I don't know how this happened, but I think they mixed some stuff up, because I'm not an actual stuntman. I do some stunts, but I'm an actor like who does some
yes.
stunts.
Yeah.
But they put me on this panel with all of these like professional stuntmen.
Oh.
And Kane Hodder was there, and Lee Waddell, who was the first Scream Ghostface, and
yeah.
it was just all these legends. Tom Mora, who was one of the Jasons as well, and
yeah.
I was sitting up there with them, and they're telling all these stories about like doing Jurassic Park and all these crazy stories, and I'm just sitting there. I was just listening to. I was like, people would ask me a question. I was like, oh wait, I'm on the panel too. I forgot. I was just listening to them, and I was just in awe. And I was like, why am I up here with these guys? Like, this is not. These guys are legends. Like, it was crazy. But they're all really, really nice guys, though.
Yeah, well, see, what I just said, without even knowing this, I was right.
There you go. That's it. Well, apparently everyone thinks so because you were on the same panel as them.
There you go.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake, but...
No.
So on the, I guess on the flip side of things, even, I guess, if we just step away from In a Violent Nature for a minute, you've been working, that's it, in sort of like the indie horror scene, particularly like in and around like Ontario and the GTA, but also like, you know, sometimes like in other parts of Canada and things like that. Can you, just because I feel like I like to highlight it because people don't always realize that Canada has some like really impressive horror films, and we have this really cool kind of indie scene, and people don't really realize that it exists most of the time until you start pointing out to people that you're like, well, you know, the original My Bloody Valentine is a Canadian mm-hmm. film, and Black Christmas and Ginger Snaps and all of these things that people consider, you know, classics now. But I think that people forget a lot of the time where they came from. This was partially what happened with Horror Roulette, is that when they were like, put together a wheel, I said, okay, it's going to be Canadian horror films because I don't know what else to put on it. So I don't know. Like, if you,
it was good choices on that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, I mean, like, how has that been for you getting to kind of work in this scene and I guess watch it build over time as well?
It's just cool. Like, I'm a fan myself. So I grew up watching all those films, and I had paid attention to, like, you know, where certain films were shot, and you know, David Cronenberg's stuff, like early on.
Have
coming
you met
up
David
to
Cronenberg?
I haven't met him yet. That's somebody I'd love to meet, but yeah, not yet. But he's he's a legend, and Black Christmas and My Bloody Valentine, like those are all just legendary movies for me. So getting to be anywhere near being a part of any of that kind of stuff is just like, it's just really cool. And I just kind of shake my head sometimes when I get to meet people, or when they're like, oh, your movie, you know, it was like this. And I'm like, is it really? Cause like, I'm like, that's the legendary movie that you're comparing me to. And I'm like, so it's just, anyway, I'm a geek. I'm a big horror nerd. So yeah, being a part of it, getting to meet anybody and, you know, talk stories, or like hear their stories about what happened during production stuff, it's just really cool.
That's awesome. And I guess, okay. So I don't know if you guys for this last film, for this upcoming In a Violent Nature 2, which I don't think we've gotten an official release date for yet. No. I know the trailer's dropped, but with that in mind, we're moving things are shifting ever so slightly to like a summer camp setting, which obviously is leaning more into very specific like summer camp slasher types of things. Is that something that I like, is there something, I guess, different? I mean, I know you're talking about the shark attack prep you've done, or that you did for it, but in terms of any of like the internal prep or the internal maybe thought process with the character moving into a different type of setting like this, was there different preparation that you felt kind of around the character? Is there like an expansion on more of the story about Johnny?
There's some different angles on it, and it also plays again onto like the unreliable narrator. Kind of like, you know, so there's more myth, and there's some different elements to it, but you still don't fully know, you know, Johnny's story. So he still is, you know, a bit of a mystery, which I love. I love that about the characters and any kind of slasher character. I think any kind of mystery there keeps a little bit of, you know, keeps him creepy. And yeah, like the whole shark thing that I was saying and watching that is. It picks up directly after the first film, so it's like,
okay,
it goes right. That's not a secret. I think it pretty much kind of shows that in the teaser too. So it does pick up right from the first film, and it goes right into the second story that you're going to see. And it goes into a summer camp, and it does sort of. Why I say the shark thing too is because I feel like Johnny is sort of like Bruce from Jaws in the beginning, where he's kind of. He's circling the camp, and he doesn't, you know, and then all of a sudden when he attacks, it is just absolute chaos. Darn. So without giving too much away, if anything is different, Johnny's just more amped up because you know, he kind of got started in the first one, and now he's like, he's on the move. So now he's moving at that pace that he's at the end of the first one, and he's in that kind of rate for basically this film. And so expect him to be just at the highest level of viciousness that he's at in the first one, he's pretty much there through all of this one. So it's very, very violent.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I mean, we listened to the podcast, where the podcast you had with Horror Roulette, and you said that, you know, there's some kills that are even more intense than, you know, the one on the yoga scene thing. So what you're saying, this, it's already awesome to hear, but also I find Johnny very planning and cunning. In the first movie, when he kind of like misdirected people with the alarm and then he went around the house and everything, what you're saying, the whole kind of like shark circling around the camp and everything, is this kind of like him planning his ways? You know what I mean? Or, I mean, if you can't say it's fine, I understand, but that's what it sounds like to me, you know?
It could be. He's, I mean, he's, you know, he's observing his prey, basically.
That's
and
it.
And then when he goes into action, it's full on action. So it's, it gets, I haven't seen the film myself either. I just know from what we shot and what I've read the script and everything, but it goes wild. And there's at least three yoga level kills that are at least, I'd say. And then there's more, and they just kind of like, they keep going into each other. And then there's another one. And then, but there is a great, I really like the story setup of what they did with this one and how they kind of flip things around to keep it interesting and fresh. So it's not just the gore. It's not just about doing, you know, more gore. There's reasons for it all happening. And there's a through line as to how it happens.
So that's what keeps it interesting, right? Like you were saying, you don't want to know everything about the killer, and everything has to be some kind of mystery to the story. So, you know, that keeps it going, which is perfect.
And they keep that in there for sure. Nash, he is, when I read the script for the sequel, I was like, this is exactly what this should be, without, you know, without spoiling anything, or without saying that it's anything too different, but also not the exact same thing at all either. So it's, he went a great direction with it.
Did you have any kind of like creative input on the character on the second one, without spoiling anything, obviously?
Not more than what I just already like did with the character in general. Like, so going into it, Nash now knew exactly kind of how I moved and what I could do. And, you know, Johnny would use his right hand for the axe. But I'm a lefty. So I do things kind of backwards too, certain ways. So just like things that were already kind of like established, but, no, not really. I mean, if anything, it would be like during a kill, I would suggest trying to do something a different way that I could physically do better, make it look better or something like that. But other than that, I kind of just look at the script and I'm like, yeah, this is great. And I mean, maybe if we get to do a third one, I have a kill that I want to pitch, but I'll see. I just think it would be fun. It was something that would be fun to do, but yeah, I mean, like you read the script and you're like, oh, this is great. I don't need that. There's nothing to add. Like, it's just good.
Right.
That's great. I also feel your pain because I'm also left-handed, and it's a right-handed world, and we're stuck here dealing with scissors that don't work.
I don't know. I'm ambidextrous, so.
I am to a degree. I'm good with certain things, but then anything detailed, I have to do with my left hand.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah, that's it.
Well, this all sounds like it's going to be great because it fully is leaning into the sequel rules for basically everything, right? You amp up the carnage, you amp up the intensity of everything. And if Johnny's, you know, started the first film here, down here, then he's starting the second film already elevated. So I think we're really interested to see how crazy things get before the end of that movie.
I love the progression of it and like where it's going. And if we do get to do a third one, like I know Nash and Shannon, they've talked to, like, they know what it's going to be. And like each movie is kind of a play, like each film is kind of a play on a different style of like an art house film kind of thing. And so the first one is like the following series kind of thing, and the second one still has that, but it's also something different. And then the third one they have a whole other idea for it. And I just hope we get to do it because it sounds like really fun.
I hope so too, because from what I learned, so we were talking to Mike P. Nelson a few weeks ago, and he said, if you want to get a movie made, you got to talk about it. Like, if you want to have a third one, you just got to say, we want a third one, you know, like people need to pick up on this.
They got the plan. They know exactly what they want to do with it. And if we get to do it, amazing. And then I think after the third one, they're like, well, then we can go to space and just do anything they want after.
You have to go to space. They always go to space.
At that point, you may as well just lean into it and do what everybody else does, which is get on a spaceship.
You can go anywhere after that. You can go back in a prequel. You can do whatever you want.
That would be so hilarious. Imagine just Johnny walking slowly into a spaceship and no one notices. And then he's like, hey,
he just casually kind of strolls along. That would make sense. And because the spaceship is leaving from the middle of the forest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll pitch the movie.
Throw some aliens in there. Good.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Why not? There could be really interesting ways of killing them. I'm sure they have very interesting weapons on their ship.
Going into the same vein, so you said shark movies that you watched. From what I understand, hopefully the second one is going to be released this year, maybe like for Halloweenish, whatever. Can you tell us?
I think it's around then. I think late summer, early fall. I don't quote me on it, but from what I know, that it should be around then.
So that sounds perfect. So for us to get, and for the listeners to get into, I guess, your frame of mind, can you tell us which shark movies you watch? Because I'm going to make a list watch all of them.
Honestly, it was just like the classics. Like I watched Jaws, and then like I actually just watched a bunch of actual like shark videos on YouTube and stuff like that. So, it was funny because I was watching all these shark videos, and I'm just I love Jaws. I mean, who doesn't? Mm-hmm. But it was the anniversary, so I went and saw it in IMAX.
Nice. Awesome.
Watching that in the theater while we were about to go and shoot the movie, and I was just like, oh, this is great. Anyway, yeah, it was mostly Jaws.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So I'm guessing you haven't watched the Netflix's Thrash.
The new one.
I haven't seen that yet. It's on my list. I haven't watched it yet though.
We're getting shark movies this year. There's one coming out this like in May.
Yeah, Deep Waters. Water,
something with Ben Kingsley and a plane crash. Yes, that's shark great. Attack yeah.
Crazy.
They're finding new ways to throw sharks into every situation.
Well, it's from the director of Deep Blue Sea, so I guess I'm not too surprised that it's just like full circle. We're coming back around to that.
That makes sense.
I'll watch it.
Deep Blue Sea is
great. You know what? People love Sharknado because they made like, what, six, eight movies? Yeah. So like, yeah, just get sharks in the movie, man. Let's go.
There was the other one, another recent one came out that takes place in Paris, and there's like a shark.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we've seen it. That one was, I don't know how to describe it. I was like, that did not happen in Paris. I've been to Paris. Like, no.
But you just, I feel like halfway through the movie, we were like,
he's great too. I forget what's his name? He's done a bunch of crazy stuff too, but he's a good director.
Okay, so shall we wrap up and do what we usually do?
So what we usually do towards the end to keep kind of like, you know, the fun going, I have two questions. They're kind of like little fun game questions, nothing too complicated. So that's what I want to do with the first one. So the first one is you have three classic slasher villains, right? So Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, and Leatherface, right? They are facing either you or Johnny as a character, you choose. So which one are you killing? Which one are you sparing? And which one are you running away from?
I'm going to spare Leatherface.
Okay,
that's fair. That we just talked about it.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to kill Michael Myers and I'm going to run from Jason, I think. Because Jason's got a little more supernaturalness to him than Michael Myers. Seems like he could maybe actually kill him. Like maybe.
I have said this before, Jason is fully a zombie by some point in that series. After he gets resurrected, he can teleport and
but
can do all kinds.
I think he's got the highest body count too, right? Because like, doesn't he kill an entire planet? And Jason X.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yes,
that's true. But then, can you really run away from him? Because he teleports. He's just gonna appear behind you.
Yeah,
you can try, and it might be easier than trying to kill him. So
yeah, it's true. Yeah, because they try to kill him a bunch of times, and it does not work. It doesn't work.
He just keeps coming back. Yeah.
Yep.
That's it. Nice. All right. Okay. And then for the second one, this is on your, let's say, personal level from the skills that you possess. You're applying to survive in a horror movie. Okay, what is the one skill that gets you hired, quote unquote,
to survive?
To survive, yeah. I don't know. Maybe you are an axe thrower, or I don't know. You can sword fight. I don't know.
You know what? I've thought about this, and there's a, it's not really a skill, I guess, but still. I've always thought that like in a post-apocalyptic like zombie kind of movie, I always think about. I'm like, why don't they make a suit out of duct tape? Because zombies can't bite through that. So I would just build everyone duct tape suits and everyone be safe. So that would be my thing.
Is this just a casual skill that you currently possess?
I mean, like, I've never done it before, but I think that I could if I needed to.
Do you have a specific, is there a specific trait of yours that would get you killed in the movie by any chance?
You know what? I have a bad knee, so I would buckle my knee or something and fall over and okay. I'd be done.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. You know what? I like that you have thought about a post-apocalyptic, even zombie apocalypse, because it's always good to be prepared. I have a plan. Yeah. I have
you're
a plan.
Like a doomsday prepper.
Chill. It's not that bad. It's just in my head.
Kind of hoping for it a little bit.
Well, I'm just saying you need to be prepared. You never know. Okay.
Yeah. Just stock up on some duct tape, man. You're good.
That's it. Duct tape, some canned foods, and know where the closest distribution center for Costco is. Don't go to Costco.
Yeah,
everyone goes.
Don't go to Costco. Yeah. No. Go to the warehouse that ships to Costco.
The warehouses. Yeah.
That's it. Exactly.
Oh boy. Okay. Wow. Thank you so much again to Rye for sitting down with us to chat about everything in a violent nature, chat about everything horror in general, particularly the kind of indie horror scene in Canada, which is also so fun to talk about.
That's great.
This was such a great conversation. It was a blast. And hopefully we will be getting a release date for In a Violent Nature 2 sometime very soon. And I'm not going to say that Fantasia Festival upcoming in July has to have it, but if it happened to sneak its way into the release schedule, I would not be mad about it. So if you guys are listening, you could just do that maybe.
That would be awesome. Do it. Just do it.
Do it. Anyway, hopefully you guys liked our sit down and this interview. As usual, please follow us on all of our socials. We're at Gravetone Pod everywhere. You can check out the website at gravetonepod.com. And feel free to please leave us a rating and review wherever you are listening. It really helps us out.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much. And until next week, guys, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.